In the Parshas we've been reading, especially in Parshas Mishpatim, there's a tremendous emphasis on Bezdin, on judgments by the courts of Israel. And I'd like to study with you today some of the laws. Again, we can't even touch the tip of the iceberg, but a very interesting question that arises with regard to courts in a halachic sense, meaning in a bezdin, is the question of reasoning, of the explanation for the decision of the bezdin. Obviously, it goes without saying that every judgment is based on a certain logic. And given all the evidence that the litigants, respectively, the defendant, the plaintiff, offer to the court, the bezdin, the judges, come to some decision. And the judges are really involved in a creative process which is divine in nature. And it's very interesting because we talk about the Mishkan, we talk about Ashos Ashchina. The Ramban, of course, says in Parshas Truma that the purpose of the Mishkan is V'yasuli Migdash V'shachanti B'sochan is Ashos Ashchina. And there is a direct connection between the Ashos Ashchina and the judgment of Bezdin. The Gemara tells us in Brachas Adav Vav, Shlosha Sheyashu B'din Shchina Beinayim. Which means that on a certain level, we could say that once the Bezdin passes a true judgment, according to the laws of the Torah, then Elokim Nitzav Badaskel, Bekerov Elokim Yishpot, that the Shechina is there, presiding as it were, present at the time that Bezdin, a Torah court of law, reaches its decision. And therefore, when you talk about the intimacy between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Knesset Yisrael throughout the generations, absent the Mikdash during exile, but nevertheless what we do have is the possibility of a Mishpat. And of course, this is a special kirva between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Knesset Yisrael. Of course, the halachos that pertain to procedures in court are very profound, and there are myriads of halachas, but this is one particular question that I wanted to call your attention to that I think is very relevant. And lahavdil in secular courts, and again, my background in law is limited to graduate courses, three graduate courses I took in international law, but what I do know is, and this was true in federal law and so forth, all the decisions, the courts provide a body, a text, a written document which explains the reasoning not only of the majority of the court, but even the dissenting opinion. And when you think about it, someone who comes for judgment, and whether he wins or he loses, but certainly in the case of one who is on the bottom, he wants to know what was the reason and upon what basis did the Bezdin issue its judgment and its verdict. And therefore, just like in Lahavdil in the West, in a secular court, it's common that the reasons are applied or are presented in order to ensure that Toveya, that Nit by the litigant, that he received a fair hearing, even if he lost the case. What does the Allah have to say about this? Is Bezdin required to supply its logic, its reasoning? And is this an obligation that's incumbent upon Bezdin? Would it make any difference if one of the Tovim would demand that Bezdin give them and supply them with the reasoning? Would that make any difference? Does the Toveya or the Nitba have the right to come forward and demand kaviyochol that the Bezdin gives them an insight and explain their reasoning? All these questions are very relevant in contemporary life with regard to decisions. So in order to begin to understand this, we start with the Mishnah in Sanhedrin Chof Tes, and there the Mishnah establishes that Gomru Es HaDavar, when the decision is made, and the which one of the judges, okay, this is interesting, the halacha is that HaGadol Shebadayanim Omer, the most, shall I say, prominent of all the judges sitting on the court, I don't know how you decide that, that has to be studied, he makes a declaration, and he basically says, Machnisin Osan, they bring in the litigants, and the Gadol Shebadayanim Omer, Ish Ploni Atah Zakai, Ish Ploni Atah Chayev. So and so, you are victorious in this court case, and so, you're obligated to pay, or whatever the case may be. Now, the Mishnah, in a very obvious, blatant way, he omits any mention of a requirement to justify or explain the decision and the reasons for the decision. You would certainly get the impression that if this Mishnah is describing the Gemara Din and the final decision, it should have mentioned something about the obligation of Beis Din to explain their decision. And in fact, if you take a look at the sugya there in Masechta Sanhedrin, and we'd like to see how this is brought down lahalacha, you'll see that there's a member here of Rav Safra, Omer Rav Safra, this is in Sanhedrin Lamed Aleph Amid Beis, Shnaim Shenis Atzmu Bedin, Echad Omer Nidon Kan, V'Echad Omer Nelech Lemakom Havad, Kofen Oso V'Don Be'iro. So let's give a little bit of a background here, because maybe from the exception to the rule, meaning this is one of those rare cases where Beis Din would be obligated to provide their reasoning, we can understand the rule itself. So Rav Safra's statement is the following. They're two Bali Din, and they have a disagreement. You know, there's a certain element of belligerence here between one and the other. And one says to the other, let's take the case here. The other says, no, let's take the case to a higher Beis Din. You know, I want to go to the greater Beis Din. And what's the final decision here? So the law is that the decision, the court case is going to be tried be'iro. So again, there are various rules here. I don't know how much we'll get into it, but in certain cases, we're going to compel one of the Balei Dinim to agree that even though there may be a greater Beis Din elsewhere, but this is the local Beis Din, and this is where the court case is going to be tried. Now, Rav Safra continues and he says the following, Vim Hutzrach Dover Lishol Kosvin Vishoalim. So again, the first part of the statement of Rav Safra is a decision as to where this lawsuit will be tried, in which Beis Din, in which locale, what level of a Beis Din, and so forth and so on. And if we force the nitba, the defendant, to show up in the court locally in his hometown, despite the fact that he wants to go elsewhere, then we go on to the second statement of Rav Safra, in which case the litigant makes a statement, a declaration, and he says, "Hutzrach hadavar lishol kos v'sholchen." He says, "Write down, give me some sort of a document, a written, signed document that reveals the grounds on which the decision was made, and I want to take this for myself." And Rav Safra says, Omar kisvu utnuli me'eze tam dantuni kosvin v'nosinlo. That in fact, the court is obligated to write down, based on the request of this nitba, a document, to record a document, draw up this document, and explain its decision. and hand this over to the Baal Din who's demanding it. So just to summarize, on the one hand, the local Beis Din is empowered, is authorized to be kofe, meaning to force the Baal Din to come in front of them for judgment. But in such a case, Rav Safra says that Beis Din is obligated to explain their reasoning and their decision on behalf of the Baal Din because of his request to do so. And Tosa says that this decision, this requirement, is limited to a situation in which Beis Din forced the Baal Dinim, or one of the Baal Dinim, to show up in front of their court, in that particular court. Now, if there was no kfiyah to come into Beis Din, then in such a case, Tosa says, since the litigant was not compelled to show up and appear in that particular Beis Din, there was no coercive measure that was applied here, then the litigant has no rights, has no zchus to demand that Beis Din provide him with the reasons for the decision. And what I want to show you is that if you open up the Choshen Mishpat Siman Yudtes, you will see that this is codified in the Shulchan Aruch. Shaal echad mi balei hadin sheyichtevu lo apsak din. So Shulchan Aruch says, ein mazkirin shom hamizakim v'lo shem hamachayvim elakosim stam ploni ba im ploni baldino lifnei bezdin umidivreyam yotza ploni zakoi uploni chayov. So on the one hand, the Shulchan Aruch here in Siman Yutes reflects our diuk in the Mishnah in Sanhedrin that we saw in Chavtes, that Beis Din is not required to present any reasons for their judgment. All they have to write down is that so-and-so came with his fellow litigant so-and-so before the Beis Din, and as a result, so-and-so is victorious, so-and-so is obligated, but no mention of the reasons is required to be given by the Beis Din. But then, when we fast forward to Choshen Mishpat, when we rewind to Choshen Mishpat Yudalid Amid Aleph, there the Shulchan Aruch codifies the halacha that we saw of Rav Safra in the sugya on Daf Lamed Aleph Amid Beis, to the effect that indeed, in such a case, Beis Din has to provide an explanation of reasoning for their decision. So here's the lashon of the Mechaber at the beginning of Yudal and Hilchos Dayonim. Shnayim shenis atzmu bedin, ze omer nidon kan, v'ze omer nalo lebezna godol. So one of the Baal Dinim wants to be judged locally, the other insists that we go to the higher assembly. Kofen oso vidon be'iro. And then the Mechaber says, "V'yom Amar kisvu tnuli me'ezet tam dantuni is kosvim v'nosim lo." In other words, the Baal Din was forced to be judged locally, and he has a right to demand that it be written for him on a document, me'ezet tam dantuni, because shema te'isim. Now, exactly what the Baal Din is going to do with that shtar, I don't know. Perhaps he can bring it to a higher court. That's not clear. But it's what is clear in the Mechaber is Kosev and Osnilo, that they have to comply with his request. So that's the first, shall we say, the first occasion of an exception to this rule. We have another exception in a Gemara in Bav Metzia, Samach Tes Amid Beis. And there it's a case of Shutfim who enter into a joint effort to make some money, some sort of what we call in Hebrew an iskama monit. And one of the shutrim decides that he's going to take the profits of the business venture and divide it up. And he does it al das atzmo. In other words, without consenting, without consulting with his partner. And the Gemara tells us in Bab Metzias Hamachtes that the two of them came in front of Rav Papa for a judgment on this, because the partner felt that he had no right, that he was cut out here from this decision to divide up the profits. He wanted to be part of it. So Rav Papa offered a decision, and that is that the chalukah was kiddin. Then, at some later stage, the same two shutfim again had a joint partnership in a business venture. The Gemara tells us they were selling wine. And this time, the other partner was the one who split up the profits from the wine without consulting with the first partner. So, on the first round in front of Rav Papa, it was Reuven who divvied up the profits without consent of Shimon. In the second case, it was Shimon who sort of like took the comma, and he did exactly that. And a second time they came in front of Rav Papa. And all of a sudden Rav Papa says to Shimon, you had no right, you were not entitled to do this. And he paskins that the division of the prophets was shalokidin, was not compliant with the halacha. So this second partner, Shimon in this case, started complaining, started getting a little bit agitated here, because this is unfair treatment. I mean, you just paskin in the same exact circumstances in favor of Reuven, and now you're paskining again in favor of Reuven against me. I mean, I did the same thing that Reuven did. And Rav Papa's response was that he had reasons why he paskin like that. And in this case, Rav Papa, as a dayan, was compelled to present his reasons for his decision. So Tosa again explains that this is an exception to the rule. And basically, there is no right on the part of a litigant to demand, according to strict halacha, some sort of reasoning for that judgment. But in this particular case, where the litigant has a very good taina, he's not just, you know, suspecting the judge of falsifying the case and the decision. There was a suspicion on Rav Papa here. Then Beis Din is obligated to clear their reputation. Tosis invokes the pasuk of Bamidbar Lamed Beis, Vayisem Nekiyem Me Hashem Umi Yisrael. Now it's here where there is some reasonable cause to doubt the truth of Beis Din, of Rav Papa's decision. In such a case, Beis Din has to reveal its decisions. And this you'll see in Tosis there in Bab Metzia, but you'll also see it in Tosis in Sanhedrin. And Tosin Sanhedrin also, on Daf Lamed Aleph, gives another alternative understanding of the sugya. And let's see how this is paskin in Shulchan Aruch. And here it is, again in Simon Yud Dalid, but now we have to fast forward to Sif Dalid. And it says like that. Yesh Omrim Shim Roa HaDayon Shebaldin choshto shenota hadin kinegdo tzarchlo dio me'ezetam donu. Now, again, in the first case, if you remember, where the litigant was compelled to be judged locally, against his will. There he's granted the right to demand a written document to explain the reasoning of the court. Here, in this case where the dayan himself is aware of the fact that there's some chashad here on the part of the balidinim, or one of the litigants, in other words, it's clear to the dayan, you know, he's intelligent enough to sense that this particular tovea or nitba is suspecting him of bias, of a bias against him, then even if, that's what the Mechaber says over here, afilu lo shal, the dayan, even if there was no demand on the part of that litigant, has to explain the grounds for his decision. And if you take a look in the Sma here, in Nobuchaf Gimel, it's a short Sma, he says that there has to be some sort of reasonable dafka b'mokum de'ika lachshod is modin lo. When does the dayan have to offer him a tam for the din? That's only because ika lachshod, meaning there's some reasonable basis for a charge here against the dayan, some of charge of bar. Mokum de'lekachshav u'malagleg, if the Baldin has no justification for suspecting the dayan, there's no reasonable charge here, reasonable basis for a charge, then Adara, we put this, and the Nidon starts complaining and yelling, we put him into Nidui. But then if you take a look at Chavdalid, it says over there, V'kolshkein im omer kisu mezu dan dantoni. How much more so if the litigant himself demands an explanation, because again, there's an objective basis for chashad. And there, the Sma says that the kolshken kshomer kisvu doesn't mean that Bezdin is not obligated until he says kisvu. But even if Bezdin was not put in that situation of kisvu, where the litigant demanded kisvu, nevertheless, orally, balpeh, Bezdin should be forthcoming. And that's what he says. Pshucho shel adayin os kidei lafuki nafshi mechshad, tzorch lo di'a psak, bimilse de taime, v'ihu omer kisvu li, meza tam datuni. That's already different. So again, this is a very complicated Sma here, but I think what we want to take out of the Sma is that Bezdin, when they're chayav to oblige the Baldin in his request for a written document, they have to do so since his objective chashad. And that comes under the halacha of Yisam Nikiyim. But even if they're not required to give a written document because the nitba did not come forward with that demand, nevertheless, they should, the dayan or the dayanim should, on their own initiative, at least orally, offer a disclosure as to what the logic was and the reasoning in their decision. So again, we see that in a number of cases, there are exceptions to the rule. And in fact, Bezdin will be required to offer some explanation for their reasoning. Okay. Now, we want to talk about other, rules or laws that apply to the responsibility of Bezdin and their obligation to provide explanations for their decision. We're going to start with the Tshuvas Hachsam Sofer, Choshe Mishmat Nomba Yud Beis, which is quoted in here in the Pischei Tshuva in Yud Dalet. Almost everything we're doing today is here in Choshe Mishmat Yud Dalet. So the Chasam Sofer writes the following. He says, Nehi sheroi v'nochon shadayin yifarish taimo mi'atzma lohasar akshus peh. Even in those exceptional cases where Bezdin is meant to provide reasons for their decisions in order to avoid any sort of lies on Bezdin. Okay, I don't know exactly how to translate that word, but he has to be clean in the eyes of Hashem. Now, it's to make sure that no one is suspecting Bezdin of doing of paskening incorrectly. He says, Mikomakom ein reshus le'idach litvar kein min adayin. So again, what the Chasam Sofer is claiming here is that the Dayan, it's appropriate for the Dayan to explain his reasoning, because he wants to undermine any possible claim of misconduct or suspicion of misconduct. But nevertheless, he says that the Baldin is not, shall we say, authorized litva min adayon. And he says, as a general rule, ha'oza hu lomar shechoshto. There's a certain ha'oza's ponim here, a certain chutzpah on his behalf to claim that he suspects the dayan. Now again, I'm not sure. I mean, we'll have to see the second paragraph of the Chasam Sofer, but just in terms of the first paragraph as we go along, it's not clear that the Chasam Sofer is talking about the case of Rav Papa that we saw in Bav Metzia, where there was objective reason to be choshing him. He may be talking as a general rule. You know, two people come in, Reuven and Shimon, for a din, and one of them says, oh, I need an explanation for your verdict. That's a Hazus Ponim. And the Chasam Sofer says, because of that Hazus Ponim, Bezdin doesn't have to respond by notifying the Bali Dinim of the reasoning for their decision. And he says, "V'im yoyz ponov lo yodiyu taimo v'lo yashivuhu klal." That if he went ahead with this impudence and he made such a demand, then the dayan should not reveal his reasoning. Dafka, says the Chasam Sofer, im machsom lefiv machmas yiras adayinu chvodo. In other words, that even in the case where there is some reason for the objective reason for the Baldin to suspect the Dayan, nevertheless, the Baldin should not be impudent with this Ha'ozis Ponim to demand an explanation. On the other hand, Bezdin should take that initiative to clear the air and their reputation. And Lahotzi Asatzman Ashchad, it's nachon that the Dayan should offer this. Because the reason why, if it's apparent, the circumstances seem to indicate that the reason why the Baldin is not demanding an explanation of the Tam is because of Yiras Hadayan Ukvodo. He wants to respect the Dayan. He has a great deal of reverence for the Dayan. Then in such a case, it's proper for the Dayan on his own initiative to explain his reasoning and extricate himself from any sort of suspicion. It means, according to Chasam Sofer, the case of Rav Papa is the exception to the rule. He writes, Omnam Baldin Osa Shalokidin Mekacha Bikish Medayas Nimukov Hivibia Eschashodu Klapov is a Dain Choshash Rav Popol Chosh Rav Popol Tzorich Legalos the Sanimuk Shad, because of this objective reason for suspicion, right? Because of the particulars of that case, is therefore it's appropriate for the Dayan to provide an answer to this demand for reasoning, to reveal the reasoning, the logic behind the decision. So that even though out of Yiras HaDayan, it would have been more appropriate, even in the case, in those particular circumstances of Papa, it would have been appropriate for the Dayan to be quiet and just accept the din, out of a sense of awe and respect and honor for the Dayan. But nevertheless, since there is some objective reasoning, so despite the element here of Ha'oza, Beis Din in this case should respond in a positive way, and they should offer some explanation for their decision, because again, as we said before, here there's objective reason for suspecting perhaps the Dayan. And v'isem nakir. Now, in addition, we wanted to mention a tshuva here from the Noda B'Yehuda. Let's just turn to page two on the bottom, and you'll see that the Noda B'Yehuda. Now we're going on to page three. Has a discussion about the following. And once again, this is quoted here in Choshei Mishpat, Siman Yedalad, in the Pischei Tshuva Yud Aleph. And it could be that if we study the Noda B'Yehuda carefully, he may have a little bit of a different approach than the Chasam Sofer. And you know, the Yehuda is much more forthcoming, much more in favor, shall we say, of a positive response on the part of Dayanim to offer explanations for their din. And in a certain particular case, he comes to the following conclusion. He says, "Im kein hadavar poshet shetzarech hadayin litein ksav kosev v'chosum." V'lo chashud etzel shum rav sheyimna milasos ken. Again, the view that seems to have the exact opposite approach of the Chasam Sofer. The Chasam Sofer, as we saw before, is very inhibited about the allowing the Balei Dinim to demand that the Beis Din give them an explanation. And basically, the Chasam Sofer wants to protect the status and the awe and dignity of the Beis Din. The Noda B'Yehuda sees it differently. He sees almost a natural, justifiable need on the part of the Balei Dinim to expect some sort of document that would explain their reasoning. That's something that, in the Noda B'Yehuda's frame of reference, is justifiable. And he says that I, meaning the Noda B'Yehuda himself, would not suspect a rabbi to refrain from revealing his reasoning. And if the rabbi is hesitant, then that itself seems to indicate that he's uncomfortable about his judgment. And he may have either chasrom deliberately or with some element of negligence, right? He's the lashon of the Noda B'Yehuda came. He says lo ya lo chashid etzli shum rav sheimana milasos kedim lo sheyodea beemes shalo don b'tzedek o b'shkoga v'gas libu bosh milahodes al emes sheta. You know, the hesitation, the inhibition on the part of the rabbi and part of the judge to offer explanations for his judgment is itself a little bit indicative of the fact that out of a sense of arrogance or perhaps of shame, the dayan of the rav doesn't want to acknowledge that he made a boo-boo, that he made a mistake. So it does seem that within the framework of the Nod of Yehuda, we should really expect the Dayanim to be more forthcoming about explaining their answers. It's almost a little bit of a gaiva on their part or a chashad on their part. Why don't they reveal their reasoning? So again, you know, we see here a fundamental issue about how we view Beis Din. Do we view them as, so to speak, these are the holy rollers, and that we have to accept their, we trust them? You know, Yisro gives a long, detailed explanation of the high level of the court, of the members of the court, and their Oev Emes, Verodev, you know, Verodev Asa Emes, and Sonei Batza, and so forth and so on, and that's it. We have to have total faith in them. And anyone who questions them and demands, I mean, there may be other elements here, you know, if once you demand an explanation, you never know where that'll go. Whereas Nod Yehuda is looking at it a little bit more from the perspective of, you know, look, you're a human being, you're a judge, you came to a decision, don't be inhibited or embarrassed about offering an explanation for your decision. It's proper that the Dayan offer an explanation for his decision. And by expanding the obligation of Beis Din supply reasoning, this might lead us to the Chiddush of the Radbaz. Again, this is way before the Nod of Yehuda. And the Radbaz has a very interesting tshuva in which he discusses this whole subject matter. And he makes this whole issue contingent upon the status of the Baal Din. Who is this litigant? What category do we classify him? Is he a Talmud Chacham? He's some sort of Torah scholar? Again, I don't know what level. Or he's an Amoritz. And the Radbaz, in this tshuva, argues that there really is a responsibility, a chova, that is upon the Beis Din to reveal their reasoning, but only in the case, and this is very interesting, it's almost counterintuitive, where the Dayan is an Amoritz. He doesn't know the Torah law. And the Radbaz claims that was the case in Bava Metzia and Rav Papa. However, on the other hand, if the Baal Davar is a Talmud Chacham, then what he's really implying is that he wants to dispute the decision of the Beis Din. And that's where, according to Radbaz, the halacha becomes very protective, so to speak, of the honor of Beis Din, because there really is a serious kind of question or accusation that's being either implicitly or explicitly hurled at the Beis Din. That's where the halacha tightens its fist and wants to get very protective of the Beis Din. And the halacha says the Beis Din doesn't have any obligation in such a case to reveal their explanation. So again, if we put the Chasam Sofer on one side and the Yehuda on the other side, we might put the Radbaz in the middle. The Radbaz, like the Nod of Yehuda, justifies the expectation that Beis Din would give a reasoning. However, in a sense, he does belong, he sort of subscribes to the camp of the, or the logic of the Chasam Sofer, meaning that we have to protect the honor of Beis Din. And if there's an element of ha'azah here, of chutzpah against the Beis Din, then basically the halacha says to that litigant who's a chutzpahdik, who has a chutzpah, go fly a kite. And the staunch, deep protection of Beis Din and its honor now takes over. Now, I do want to mention here that I have an article that discusses, at least in part, a tshuva from the Maram Galanti, in which he seems to take a different approach than that of the Radbaz. And these are both Sephardic poskim from that earlier period of the Achronim. And he says that dafka in the case of a Talmud Chacham, there's more of an expectation and a responsibility on Bezin to explain their reasoning, because the Talmud Chacham can learn from this. And I'm not quite sure of it, but I suspect intuitively that he may be saying that not only can he learn from the reasoning of the Psak Din, but he might even want to question it. And we'll see what his rights are to take it to a higher court. In the case of an Amoritz, no matter what explanations they offer him, the Amoritz doesn't understand what it's all about. He just doesn't have the kelim to analyze this. Now, you might argue, but let him take this reasoning to a Talmud Chacham and see what the Talmud Chacham says. Yeah, but in the immediate confines of Beis Din, at least, it's the Talmud Chacham that has a right to say, well, give me an explanation that I can understand, because I'm also a shtickle dayan. I know the halachas of kosher mishpat. I know what the rules and the regulations are, and I can appreciate your logic and your reasoning. So it's pretty interesting that there were two poskim that are almost contemporary, and both, the lowest common denominator to both is they want to distinguish between Amoritz and Talmud Chacham, but they go in opposite directions, because on the one hand you have the Radbaz's approach. I mean, he's worried about Ha'aza, he's worried about Kvod Beis Din, he's worried about the fact that the Talmud Chacham is going to have an element of what word can I use here, of dispute, and throw a question mark on the psak of the Beis Din when the reasons are revealed to him. But the Amoritz is, he's just accepting the decision, but he has a right to understand what that decision is all about. He's not coming up with some sort of casting a shadow of a doubt or a question mark on the ruling of the Beis Din. And the Maram, on the other hand, is saying that it's dafka the Talmud Chacham, from the perspective of Din Lamas, of Tzedek Tzedek Tirdov, he wants to know what it's all about. And if you take a look at the sugyas of the Gemara, I mean, before we saw one sugya in Bava Metzia, I want to point out to you a different sugya in Bav Metzia, and this is on Daf Samach Tes. There, what we're going to have is a Chiddush of the Ramban, and the Ramban in Bav Metzia Samach Tes and Beis wants to suggest that although in the case of Chashad, the sugi Rav Papa, where there was objective reason for suspecting Rav Papa of bias, Beis Din has an obligation to fork over, to take that initiative and explain their reasoning. Rav Papa has to justify himself. But in the case what we discussed about kfir level of Beis Din, where one litigant says, I don't want to go to this Beis Din, but we force him to come locally and show up at that Beis Din, then, according to the Ramban, under those circumstances, Beis Din has to write just simply the claims of each tzad and the psak din, but nothing more. They don't have to give any explanations or justifications for their decision. They record the claims of the respective litigants, and they record their ruling. And the reason why the Ramban says it's important that this is written down is because once the Baal Din is granted that shtar in his hand, he can take that shtar and register his appeal, wants to take it to a higher Beis Din. But there's no need for an explanation here, because again, there's no objective suspicion here of bias. It's just that it's a technical rule that, look, you didn't want to let me go to a higher Beis Din, but maybe with this ksav, the higher Beis Din will read the ksav, they'll understand the reasoning, and they'll decide they want to take on the case. The Ramah, which we started before here in Yudalid, when he speaks about the case of Chashad, you know, the case of Rapapa, where there was objective reason for suspicion, he writes, Ein tzarch lichtov lo hataimim v'harayos, rak kosvin lahem hatainos v'apsak din. It just seems like, according to the Ramah's psak here, even in the case of Chashad, there's no requirement of Beis Din to offer and reveal in writing their explanation and justify their decision. The Ramah seems to be of the opinion that these two exceptions that we said, where we do give a ksav, i.e. in the case of Chashad or in the case of Kfir, the respective claims of the litigants are recorded, but, and of course the Psak Beis Din, but not the reasons for the ruling. Now if you take a look at the Sma here in Chav Dalid, that was that long Sma that we alluded to earlier. Again, we're not going to go through the whole Sma, but he seems to imply that that the ruling here of the Ramah is applicable and logical in order to satiate the desire of the litigant, of the Baal Din, to appeal his case to a higher Beis Din. However, in a case where the litigant is not going to appeal his case to a higher Beis Din, then Beis Din would have to go a step further and reveal that logic. In a case, at least, of chashad, there's reasonable suspicion of bias. So basically, the Sma understands that in various cases, we have to facilitate, on behalf of the Baal Din who lost the case, the ability to appeal his case to a higher court. And we're not going to expect that, you know, the high court has to, you know, has to have a written document to explain the ruling of the court. That they themselves will understand what the basis of the ruling is. There's no need to add an explanation. I mean, another svara was to say that they shouldn't be biased in any way either by the decision of the first court and the reasoning for it. Let them come fresh. But be that as it may, it comes out according to the Sma that when does the Ramah exempt Beis Din from giving any explanation? All Beis Din is chayav to do in those two exceptional cases to offer a ksav, says the Sma. That's because there are objective reasons that indicate that the Baal Din wants to go to a higher Beis Din. But if, and therefore the higher Beis Din doesn't need any explanation for the decision and the reasoning behind it. But Eino Chinami, in a case where there's no appeal that's going to be made, Beis Din should reveal that logic. And why? Because there's reasonable suspicion, or because the Baal Din never wanted to go to that Beis Din. Now, if you take a look at the Pisrei Tshuva, right here off in Art, in Yudalid, he quotes a Tshuva from the Chavetz Yoyer. So let me just see if I can read to you. Just one second. The Chavetz Yoyer has problems with Ramah, and although he's willing to accept the Ramah as far as Ksav is concerned, meaning that in the Ksav that Beis Din writes up this recorded document, they can omit their reasoning, but he says at least Baal Peh, they should offer their explanation, their reasoning. So the Chavetz Yoyer is being mechalik here between the written document and the oral explanation for their reasoning. The Radbaz, interesting enough, makes a similar distinction to what we saw in the Rishonim before between Chashad and Kfir. but a little bit in the opposite direction to some extent. According to Rabbaz, in the case of Chshad, when the manner in which the decision was made seems to generate a certain element of suspicion, he says that Dai b'mesiras ha-tainus upsak hadid. All that Bezin has to write down on a document is their, you know, who said what, and to litigants, and the final decision. In the case of Kfiya, their Bezin has to offer their explanations. Now, this Radbaz doesn't seem to be accepted la'alocha. Okay, Rabbi, so we're running out of time now, so I just want to bring this all into contemporary perspective and what the minig is today in the Rabbanut Rashit, in the chief rabbinate here in Israel. There are what's called Bate Dinim Le'irur, what's called Achros Irur, meaning courts of appeal. These are rabbinic courts. And this really dates back to the times of the Brits, of the British, when the British were in control here in the land of Palestine. They would not recognize the rulings of any religious Bezdin, those authorities, unless there was a system of courts of appeal. And even though this was a result of the Brits, it became the minhag ha'makom here, the common practice, for the Bati Dinim that are official, you know, the Rabbanut, of the Bati Dinim and the Rabbanut, to create courts of appeal. These are Chos Irur, and as a result, Bezdin will have to explain their rulings so that there's a possibility that a higher court could overrule their decisions. Now, the Sephardic chief rabbi back in the day, in his Mishpatei Uziel, Rav Tzion Ben Tzion Uziel, in his Tshuvas in Choshen Mishpat, he claims that Dafka, in a modern contemporary context, it's very, very important. There's a great obligation for Bezdin to reveal the reasoning of their decision. And the reason for that is, he says, because of what goes on in the civil courts. They explain their reasonings. They bring proofs to justify their decisions. That enhances their reputation in the eyes of the people. That's why law students will study their decisions. Then he says, and I want to read to you his language. Again, it's a modern Hebrew. He writes, he says that Hargashato ha-musarit shel adayin eino nishmas la-halacha b'mokom shu roya ritzono Haneman shall baldin ladas var mishpadulo nitenlo sipuk ze madulo nishtamesh biznamnut zu lekayem batzmenu vishafatati bein ish u bein re'eu vodati lehem eschuke elokim vitorosov. So he writes that we should act civilly to the Lahavdil, to the civil courts, to inspire confidence in the eyes of the nation. It's appropriate, he says, for Bezdin to explain their decisions, to present some sort of a summary of the respective arguments of the litigants, the reasons for the decision. This will provide, number one, an opportunity for an appellate court to review the decision and teach the law to the nation. And he speaks about the ethical sense of the judge. You know, what was his reasoning? If he doesn't explain his reasoning, and, you know, he really senses that that the Baldin wants to know the Dvar Mishpat. I mean, the Baldin really has that right. Why shouldn't we oblige that desire on the part of the Baldin to understand the Mishpat itself? And he says that by explaining the decision, this will enhance the fulfillment of Vishafatati Bein Ish Ubein Re'evo Dati Lemes Chukel Kimitorosov. This is a way of enhancing our appreciation of the Mishpat of Elohim, the Torah of Hashem. And he writes, "B'ksivas psak din minumak," by writing a detailed explanation of the reason for the din, "Marim anu es midas hatzedek shel hamishpat b'Yisrael." This is our opportunity to reveal that high level of justice inherent in the law of Israel, "vit amtzuto shel adayan," and to also reflect and reveal the amount of great effort that the judge put in, "lachkar et kama shiyod magas levaras ha'emes," that the Dayan really put himself out and tried, as you know, with great effort to clarify the truth, "legalot et ha'mirma v'aziv shel balei adin." The Dayan tried as hard as he could to reveal where the, you know, where's the mirma here, where's the ziuf, you know, one of these two bali dinim is trying to extract money, or he's unwilling to pay money because of ziuf and mirma, and the Dayan is now fighting against that bal din. He says, "Chova zos gedol yoser bizman hazeh shekol batidim shel charos menamkin es mishpatom v'rayos v'chachos atzdokas adin v'zeh mokir et dayonim et dayneihem b'einei kol ha'am lomelo nase gam onu kidvar zeh l'chabe v'mishpat l'gadol kvodo l'ochiach tzidkosu v'tzidkas shovtov b'einei bali adin atzmo v'al yodom l'einei kol ha'am l'man yakiru v'yedu kulam Nechonus divrei Moshe Rabbeinu b'Torah sol lemar umi goy gadol asher lo chukim mishpatim tzadikim kechol haTorah zos asher anochi nosein lifneichem hayom." So it's very interesting that Rav Uziel here is taking a very strong stand. The Pella here is that he's comparing it to, he's almost deriving his conclusions from secular civil courts, but he says that this is an opportunity for our courts to reveal the depth and the beauty of Torah, the justice of Torah, the system that's so profound, and the greatness of our Bali Dinim, so that everyone should recognize the Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu, and declare, what nation is there who has such chukim, mishpatim, tzadikim, like the Torah that we received? Now, there is such a thing as a private Beis Din. This is not the Rabbanut Beis Din, the official Beis Din of the, you know, recognized by the State of Israel. And in the case of private Bali Dinim, you know, it's difficult to say, let's compare this to the norm and size up to civil courts. Every Beis Din really has to take it upon itself, you know, what practices, what minhagim it wants to follow, what kind of dinim, you know, it will, you know, by what dinim it will rule. And in many batei dinim, again, a private Beis Din, in civil cases, we find that the minig is to add a special se'if. Now, let me explain what this special se'if is all about. A se'if is a clause. And let's say the two Bali Dinim come to a private Beis Din for a decision to, and authorizes that private Beis Din to arbitrate an agreement between them, between the two litigants. In such a case, although we don't have the reasoning of Rav Uziel and the public nature and so on, that the Beis Din should be obligated to supply reasons for the decision, they're really not obligated. And therefore, the Beis Din, in practice, will have to make this decision. The minig seems to be, to the best of my knowledge, that almost always the Beis Din will provide their reasoning. But they add a clause. That's what I wanted to emphasize. The clause in that agreement that's signed by both Bali Dinim from the get-go in this arbitration agreement is that they accept the authority of Beis Din, even though Beis Din is not obligated to supply the reasons. They have to know that, and they have to sign on that. And what I wanted to add was one last point over here, but I can't seem to find it right this second. Oh. Here it is. There's a sefer called the Smicha L'Chaim. And he writes, this is in Ebn Ezra, in fact, that although, again, there's a very strong reason and logic behind Rav Uziel's writings, but nevertheless, it will not always apply. He writes that in cases where there is a halachic obligation to state the reasons, right, for example, when there was a chashad, or when there was kfiyah and that stuff, that kfiyah is not nogea to a private bezdin, but chashad, then in such a case, it's not totally b'minog, and the bezdin should really follow the din itself and reveal their halachic reasoning to avoid any chashad. So basically, what he's claiming here in this particular tshuva is that although that chasima, that signature on that se'if in the shtar borus on the part of the two litigants would in effect alleviate Beis Din of any need to be moser to provide any explanations for their reasoning, but nevertheless, that's only within the context of a chiyuv Beis Din. The signatures of these two litigants on the arbitration contract cannot waive the dayonim of their obligations that come under a general universal halacha, that an obligation that's incumbent upon every member of Klal Yisrael. So in the case of chashad, where the obligation to reveal the logic and the reasoning behind one's decision is a result of the Yisem Nekiyim, which is an obligation that's incumbent upon every single Jew, the litigants do not have any, shall we say, zchus, any legal halachic rights to waive that responsibility, that obligation, because again, that obligation is not vis-a-vis the litigants. That's an obligation that's inherent in morality and how a person has to live his life. So if you're talking about within the context of Beis Din and the laws that apply to the obligations of the dayanim vis-a-vis the litigants, you could say that this private Beis Din has a signature from the litigants that they don't have to, as dayanim and as shof, they don't have to reveal their reasoning. But if you're talking about a chiyuv that's incumbent upon the Beis Din, not b'toras Beis Din vis-a-vis the Bali Dinim, but as a chiyuv, be taught, you know, to live up to the moral standards of the Torah, v'isam nekiyim, even outside the context of Beis Din, then the shtar borus has no power to remove that. Okay, so we covered this topic pretty thoroughly. Again, it's just a tip of the iceberg of the Hilchos Dayanim. But again, do the members of the court have to supply the reasoning for their decisions? And I think it's quite a fascinating contemporary issue that really touched on the whole nature of the relationship between the Bali Dinim and the Dayon. All right, we'll stop here. Thank you so much.